am ready. Had to catch my breath for a minute, but it's time to get busy. I'm not going to do my normal monologue where I'm touching on some things. You know, we touched last night. We give a shout-out to the people that, you know, unfortunately lost their lives over the weekend at the concert at NRG. Thoughts and prayers with the families, everybody. But tonight I got to move fast because I got somebody special on this. We ready to go, y'all. Look here. I ran into this person some years back, and those that know me know how I am when I hear folk singing songs on my ex-wives and baby mamas. If they don't do it right, you get that face. And the keyboard player in the band that she was singing with, he looked at me one night, he said, "You ain't make that face." I said, "She good, but don't tell her. Don't tell her." So I got on the show tonight, the sultry songstress, the incomparable, none other. I'm introducing to some, I'm presenting to others. Miss Colette.
What's up, Ezra? How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging. I got to get back in the groove with this show. You know, I had this show some years back, and I let it go. And my biggest fear was that I was going to come back like Arsenio Hall and my show would suck. So just getting the jitters out and working all the logistics out, we back up and rolling with it. And every Tuesday, I love the spotlight. Local talent as far as the music game goes. A lot of people don't know the talent that's in Houston, Texas.
And you are so right. And I thank you so much for having me on your show tonight.
Oh, no. Hey, I thank you for coming. I'm just a nobody. Just so, you know, when I get y'all on my show, it's something special. And, I just was excited and ready to roll. What I want to do is I want to introduce you to some folk and just kind of give the listeners, I see y'all, if you want to talk to Colette, just hit the button and I'll bring in, but let her introduce herself. Give them a little background on who Colette is, you know, talk to us.
Okay, well, like you said before, we met many, many years ago. Back in Third Ward, Texas. So
yep.
It was a pleasure being with those musicians for the length of time that I was. My name is Colette. I was born and raised right here in Missouri City, actually. I was born and raised in Missouri City, Texas, and I actually still live in Missouri City. I've been singing since I was probably in elementary in church. Grew up, my dad was a pastor of a church. Grew up in church politics, just being around just a lot of influential people in my life. And coming from where I came from, music and ministry was big. And so my family, my dad's family had a quartet group. All of my uncles and aunts and cousins and everybody knew how to sing. But I think I was the only cousin that actually kind of pursued music as heavy as any of the other rest of them. And I've just been hitting it strong ever since. Some background for a couple of artists over the years and have toured over the years. But, you know, life happens, and then I got married, had some kids, settled down, came back and decided, you know, to stay here for a minute and organized the band Sultry, S-O-U-L-T-R-E, back in 2006. And we've been in Houston ever since.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's something. As a female artist, how hard is it for you to put a band together based on, you know, putting the right musicians together that vibe and can grow into a chemistry to where you can actually work and be totally uninhibited?
Well, when I organized back in 2006, it was more of, you know, just like you said, finding the right musician. And I've always been blessed to have a staff of musicians that we really vibed well together. Like, we really, really vibe well together. Even in organizing my own band and singing with the other local bands here in Houston, I've always managed to, you know, like, kind of fit in and vibe well. Of course, we've had some side eye times. We've had, like you said, look at your strange times. We've had some times where you're just trying to make it through and hurry up and get off stage. But for the most part, I would actually say within the last year, and no slight to any of the musicians that I've ever worked with, but this core of musicians that I have right now, they're ridiculous. Like, I couldn't have dreamed of putting together the heat that I have right now, and that's what they are. They are really the heat. Like, they bring fire every time they hit the stage, whether it's three of them, three-piece in it, or all five of them together. They are just really some phenomenal musicians. And, again, no slight to any other musicians that I work with, but you were talking about chemistry. We have a certain chemistry and a certain familyhood that we bring to the stage that they know where I'm going, I know where they're going. I don't have to say what I want to do next. Me and my MD, we kind of read each other's mind, and we laugh about it because he already know where I want to go, and because we've been together so long, that kind of chemistry is hard to come by. So you kind of cherish having those group of people around you.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta make time. It's just been a busy 2 years for me, but I gotta make time to come out and hear this band, because, you know, when I met you, you were with the Unit Band. And
correct.
The amount of chemistry.
And big shout out, big super shout out to the Unit Band. I was with the Unit Band at that particular club for over 15 years. I was at the same spot 15 years every Friday. Unless something happened, rain, sleet, or snow, we were there. And so I really appreciate Eric, JB, Kerry. Back then it was Big Ken. I really appreciate those guys that before I really had a platform, or I was just getting my feet back wet here in Houston, I met up with, me and Eric Porter used to go to school together, and so he was like, hey, we got a band, you know, why don't you come fill in? I actually was just there to filled in, turned in 15 years later.
That means y'all vibe good, you know.
We vibe really good.
And it's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's true because, you know, I'm a musician. I guess they say you stay a musician for life, but I don't gig anymore. But when I started gigging and the bands that I play with, I mean, locally, nationally, that was the thing. People always wonder, well, why this group why this artist leave and go solo? Majority of the time, after so many tours, so many shows, they can't stand each other, you know, and if you're working to get paid, not because you love, you know, the gigs. So for y'all to be local and stay together that long, that's great chemistry, you know.
Oh, yeah, we did. We really had great chemistry. It was good.
Yeah.
I think a lot of bands stood the test of time until COVID, really. A lot of bands stood the test of time and collectively stayed together until COVID. And once COVID happened and we weren't able to be in the clubs or gig or do some of the things that we were used to doing together collectively, by the time it was, you know, they let up a little bit and we went to what was it, 25% capacity or 50% capacity, it wasn't that many venues that really even wanted to have a band, because having a band meant getting that capacity quickly. Just with the band being in the building, you might already be at capacity. So.
And then it's hard for musicians to play with masks over their face, too. You know,
You
up there doing a 45-minute set, you know, when you get a break, you just trying to breathe. You need a damn nebulizer or something, you know, because especially a drummer playing with a mask on. But what? We kind of getting into, you know, situations with the band. I got to get back on Colette. Did you actually, when you were singing, how did you develop the style that you have? Because this is what makes you unique. And this is why when JB said, you ain't make that face, and I was like, she good, but don't tell her. You not only can tailor the song to fit you, but you also make it fun to watch you sing the song. You know,
so I'm gonna attribute that to
you got the flair to go with it.
I'm gonna attribute that to many years ago. Me and my dad used to sit up, and back when it was a big deal, like you pop popcorn to look at the Grammys. You know what I'm saying? Like the world stopped because the Grammys came on TV. So everybody wanted to make sure you saw stuff. So it was a difference in watching people perform, and there's a difference in watching people entertain you. And so I always looked at both aspects. There's a lot of singers out here, and they, oh, my God, they're phenomenal. I don't ever claim to be the best singer in Houston, ever, ever, ever. But I do proclaim that I'm probably one of the best performers because I'm going to make sure that I collectively keep you engaged. To me personally, it's like the and don't start cussing me out. I don't want your fans bashing me. I'm not a huge Michael Jackson fan, but Michael Jackson to me wasn't the best singer. He was a hell of a performer. And you combine those two together, that's why he was so relevant. It was ridiculous the things he could do. So making sure that you are able to at least hold the note. But like you said, I believe the reason why I'm still here and the longevity has lasted is because of being able to captivate both with music and being able to entertain you. You have to keep people wanting to watch you. If they exactly. Holding conversations and you can hear people talking, everybody on their cell phone, and you're doing something wrong.
Exactly. I got a video clip, and this, you know, I still am, I just haven't been out, just a huge fan of, you know, Teasers and Friday Nights. Friday Nights especially. And one of my friends wanted to have a birthday party, and I was like, oh, we got to go to Status. This is back when y'all was doing Status. So we got to do Status. I'm going to set it all up. And I was telling them, they was like, can she sing? I've seen her before. But I say, because y'all be in here socializing and this, that, and other, pay attention. Watch her work. So you were singing The Boys. I like it. And right in the middle of this song, you was in, I'm about to sing you that clip. This big old tall cowboy walked by with his hat on. He's like, you singing, getting ready to hit the chorus. And he just went, ooh, you so fine. And the whole room just like exploded. And you like, oh, don't y'all look at me like that. Y'all know them cowboys. And man, it just turned the whole atmosphere around. Well, it took it up a notch. You know,
now being in those, back then we were able to have intimate settings. We were able to be intimate. So back when Swag, and I believe that was probably when Swaggers was on 59, and we were really intimate.
Status. That was Status on Friday.
Oh, okay, Status on what used to be Dowling.
Yeah, on Emancipation.
So again, these are intimate settings. So it's hard not to miss somebody walking through the door. And you know how we are. If somebody walks through the door, somebody drops something, somebody yell, we all going to turn around, look around, try to figure out what's going on. So I just called out the obvious.
and that's when everybody was really, all the little fraternizing and stuff, because y'all had done about two, three songs tops. And so it was like, okay, now they paying attention to the band. I'm like, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. She ain't even got hot yet. So you already know by the end of the night, you did the birthday thing and all that. That just really set it off. So, and I've been around a lot of vocalists, especially local. And, you know, the thing that I pay attention to the most with your audience. How do you engage with your audience? Do you just get up and sing, or do you make the people feel like they're part of what's going on? And you do that so well, making people feel like they're part of the show. You know, that's what I want to come out and watch Colette. You know, that's what makes people want to come out and listen to this artist, that artist. There's something unique about them. Your style can't be copied in this town. You got your own style, the way you work it. You know, the audience know when I come to see Colette, I might end up in the show. She might just walk out there where I'm at or whatever, you know.
Right.
That part, it can't be taught. That's in you.
Right. Well, I will say there are artists now that are starting to do that, starting to be more engaging. I didn't notice it at first, and somebody brought it to my attention. They was like, "Hey, some of the things that you're doing now, that they're doing now, you've been doing that. You was doing that back when you first started." And I was like, "Yeah," I said, "But I mean, it is what it is." I'm glad that we're able to feed off of each other. There are things that I've learned from being at other local artist shows. I'm like, wow, you know, I might need to incorporate that. Or wow, you know, that's different. That's unusual. And the reason why I'm saying this is there's a underlying feeling amongst some of us here in Houston that, you know, you can't copy what somebody else is doing, or you stole this from me, or you took that from me, and that crab in a bucket kind of mentality. And I always, my motto is there is enough stage for everybody. It's too many platforms for us to be on, for any of us to say, you took something from me and I can't take it anywhere else. It's too many restaurants, it's too many venues, it's so much that we could do here in Houston. And it saddens me at times that's sometimes how we feel. But the good part is, like I said, we're able to learn from each other. Those of us who want to learn from each other, we're able to learn from each other. But, yeah, growing up in the ministry and growing up in church is an engaging type of place where you have to engage the congregation, especially like in praise and worship, to be a part of what you're doing. So transferring everything that I grew up with and engaging my audience, because I'm engaging a congregation, it just filtered into the gigs that I do, or being around venues, engaging the audience in what you're doing to keep them captivated for the entire time that you're up there.
Don't be discouraged either, because, you know, I left music to go into comedy. It's the same thing. Yeah, I did the joke about this. I did the joke about that. You know, man, you done stole. No. 9 out of 10, that joke, probably older than the both of us. It's just we took it to we put it into our own. But at the same time, we need to sit down and talk, because if mine hitting better than yours, then we need to go and squash that and not take it. If yours is better, we need to squash that and you go take it and go with it. Or we'll agree that this joke won't be done by either of us here. But when we go on the road, we can do that. You know, it's the same thing with comics and the venues and all that. And I want to ask you this also. How hard is it to get venues to take you seriously as an artist? Well, like you said, I might come with the 3-piece, or I might come with the 5-piece. To actually,
it's not so much of them taking. It's not hard to get the venues. I think the obstacle that I have endured the most is being a female. This is a male-dominated industry, and so when you're doing business, at first it was hard for the owners to take me seriously, because they was always used to talking to a male or being able to, I'm going to say, for lack of even thinking of a better word, manhandle somebody. And because I grew up with a man, my dad raised me, you couldn't manhandle me. your tongue wasn't going to be slicker than mine. You wasn't going to be able to cuss me out because I was going to hold my ground. So, and I've still been doing that. I used to joke with people and say sometimes I had to grab myself, and then I had to remember I'm not a dude. I can't grab myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wanted to just go in there thumping, like, but I can't do that. I'm still a woman. But I had to become aggressive in my business because of venues not taking me seriously. But that was some years ago. There have been more females that are starting to dominate or take over managing their own bands or managing their own entertainment group or whatever they're doing. So that's getting better. Again, it's still more men out there than it is women. But that, I've never had a problem as far as the band part of it. It was the business side. It's always been the business side. The band is the easy part. Putting the band together was the easy part. It was doing the business with the club owners or the venues or the clients.
Yep.
Whatever it
same
was, it was always the business side.
Yep, same with that. And back when I gigged in the 80s, early 90s, you know, clubs were more open because you didn't have social media. You didn't have, you know, YouTube and all this where people could just go look at something that somebody shot on the phone, all this,
mm-hmm.
You know, DJs were DJs, bands were bands. So, you know, the clubs were happening and it was fun. But now, you know, sometimes bands have to compete with DJs. How frustrating is that?
Well, I'll say this. Now clubs are, and it was still back like that back in the gap. Clubs had hot nights. They knew which night made the most money. So if you already know that your Thursday, Friday is a hot night, you don't want to spend money. You're already making the money, so why bring a band in? So you are competing against the DJ because you're trying to convince the club, hey, let's do something different, try something different. Why don't you bring a band in, enhance this? And the first thing they'll say is, well, I don't need to enhance it. We already making money. So it's more of a trying to find new and innovative ways to approach not just clubs, and I don't want to keep gearing toward clubs, but just any venue, trying to just find innovative ways to approach venues that you're trying to offer them something that's going to be lucrative for everybody.
And let's not just, yeah, like you say, stay on clubs. I mean, as an artist, your goal is not to, I want to work every club in the city. I want to get a night every night a week. I mean, there are corporate events, private, you know, functions.
Right.
And they pay better than clubs anyway. So as an artist, you always want to branch out for the other gigs. You know, that's what gets you going. Even if it's on the road, if you can meet my budget and accommodate my travel, okay, y'all, let's go.
Yeah.
We go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and that's
what
it is. It's all about being able to accommodate the budget. Now, I will say this. Sometimes, like I said, you run into that unusual, beautiful group of people, musicians, that you want to work. Y'all just love working together sometimes. I mean, so much at times that you'll take a L monetarily just for all of us to be together.
Yeah.
And I will
yeah.
say that the group of people that I have right now, we've done venues and have done performances where we were like, wow, because we all want to be on stage and we all want to make this moment happen together. Hey, let's not worry about the money. Let's get in here. Let's show them what we got. I always say for every time that we have to sacrifice, God is going to make an increase. So for every time that we've had to say, hey, we're going to sacrifice $25, we're going to sacrifice $50, we're going to sacrifice $100, out of every time we've done that at any performance, somebody will get in contact with me or my assistant. We're like, hey, I want to book you for this. Or, hey, I want you to come do this. And it turns out to be tenfold, you know, two times, five times the money that we was losing. So I never try to look at performances as a monetary thing. I think at some point, of course, you want to make sure that you're making the money, but I think at when I start looking at performing as this is a job and I'm only here for the money, I'm going to stop. Because
it's
I actually love singing. Yeah, if it's not fun anymore and I don't love going to get up and do it, I need to quit.
I tell you a funny story. I was backstage one night, and this one I was a rookie in the game. I probably hadn't really made but a few dollars, but whenever Steve was working, I'm sitting there with my pad and my pencil, and I'm taking notes. I don't want to be his friend. I don't want to talk to him unless I got a serious question. So he would look at, you know, the dude that had the clubs, or he'd look at his bodyguard, Boomerang, and be like, that nigga, that'll scare me, man. He's too quiet. Something wrong with him. But Monique came in the green room one night, and she was fairly new in the game, you know, for people that didn't know her. So she just kept talking about, these people call me, but if they ain't got the money, I ain't doing. I told them if they ain't had the money. And all of a sudden, Steve just went off, you know. Get your fat ass down and quit talking about money. That's all your big ass. I mean, he just nutted up, and he's like, do this because you love it. And if you do it because you love it, the money gonna come.
Always.
But right now, don't nobody know your big fat ass, so shut the fuck up.
Oh, my goodness.
Went off. Oh, yeah. He's like, you sick of that shit. You do this shit. We ain't making no money right now, but do this because you love it, and the money gonna come. Fat ass. And he walked off, and she started crying. You know, he told me, right, and I'm sitting there like, should I hug and pat on the back? Should I own, you know? But that was 20 years ago, over 20 years ago. And I learned. Sometimes, like you say, you take the L because you never know who's sitting in that audience that goes,
you never know.
I'm going to book them for something. I'm going to book them for something. And you get it back. That, when I did my stint in Vegas, there was like a group of musicians. Everybody, you know, you working. One playing at this hotel. One playing at this hotel. They playing with this group. Well, they get together every Monday, because Monday is most musicians' off night. And in Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns, they get together, and they don't make no money. There's too many of them. But it's for the love of what they do. To where they got a website now. I mean, people go to Vegas, man, like, when can we see Fat City Horns Monday night? Bam, it's packed. You know, when you do it because you love it, and you're good at it.
The money going to come.
That money is always going to come. That money going to come. So who are your influences when you were growing up listening to music?
Well, my favorite singers have always been Yolanda Adams. I loved Yolanda Adams. I used to think I was a little mini Yolanda Adams when I was growing up. I would try to mimic every little thing she did. So I love Yolanda Adams. I love to listen to Patti LaBelle, Aretha Franklin. Chaka Khan was still one of my favorites, the Chaka Khan. Anita Baker is one of my all-time favorites. I love the Commodores, the Gap Band, like my Bootsy Collins, Etta James. I listen to, there's not too many genres of music that I didn't listen to because my dad was so into music. He had almost every album, even though he was a minister. He had every album. He just enjoyed music. So I can't, like, narrow it down to say, hey, I only listen to this or I only listen to that. The Canton Spirituals, like, it was so many different. The Mississippi Mass Choir, that was one of my favorite things to listen. It's just all over the place. The music was all over the place. I listen to country music. I listen to Zydeco. I listen to classical. We listen to everything in the house. So I can't just narrow it down to, like, one specific thing.
And when you love music, I mean, you can't just put yourself in a box.
Yeah.
You have to listen to all of it. Well, you don't have to. You want to.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's universal.
The funny part is I sing so much now. I sing with lyrics so much now that my favorite style of music now is jazz. I don't want to hear anybody singing. I just want to hear the music. I find myself turning to 90.9 on my radio, turning to some type of jazz something, on my radio in my car or in the house, because I don't want to hear the lyrics. I just want to hear the music.
Yeah, that's, you know, 90.9 is my all day, every day. Me and Donna go at it in the mornings, and then me and Kyle hit it in the evenings.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, and I've been that way for years. Mainstream radio, I don't really want to hear it, because I don't want to hear the same song every 15 minutes. I know the quality, you know, that I'm listening to. It might
right.
be a popular song, but I'm listening to the artist. And I know what I'm hearing, and I'm like, that ain't working. You know, give me some more Tamia on the air. You know, give me some Monica. Give me some Vivian Green, you know. Give me more Rochelle Pharrell.
Switch it up.
I want to hear some singing, you know. I want to hear some singing. Because, like I say, when you're in certain cities, you never know who's going to pop up in a club. And, hey, they welcome each other. Come on. And you might see, you know, Rochelle, Layla, you know. You might, my man, I love Rashawn Patterson. And they get up and just clown, you know. And you're like, I didn't know I was going to get that tonight, but you got to come out and support. And we are excellent artists, you know, in the city, to where it's hard to go wrong. And everybody got their own thing. So, you know, if I want to hear this, you know, I can go hear this. If I want to hear that, I can go hear that. That's what makes it beautiful, man, just...
I always
you
tell
know,
people I know how to stay in my lane. I know what my lane is. I know what I cater to. And I'm really comfortable with staying in my lane.
You so damn retarded on stage, though. But, you know, I ain't tell you this. Remember, I don't know if you remember, my buddy and his wife flew in from Chicago, and I brought him to hear you one night. You did Dr. Feelgood. And... his wife, actually, she sings with Ricky Dillard. And she was like, do y'all have other places like this? And I said, yeah, you know, just depending on what night of the week it is or whatever. So they came back again, and she was like, can we hear on a Wednesday? I was like, nah, you don't hear on a Wednesday. Now they can hear you on a Wednesday, right?
Yeah, at one point, earlier this year, we were gigging Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, to the point that I was like, my voice needs to rest one day. So
yeah.
I've kind of backed down off of taking so many gigs, because like I said, it's not about the money anymore. It's about let's have a good time. Let's put some quality shows together. So right now I'm available on Wednesdays, Fridays, and certain Saturdays of the month.
Oh, so you're not doing the Wednesday no more. I've been saying I got to make a point
every Wednesday. I'm there every Wednesday. No, I have every Wednesday, every Friday.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, as a drummer, I got to ask you, do you like the church drummer or the pocket drummer better?
I like them both to mix together.
Uh-uh. Can't do that. You got to take the church drummer.
Well, I'm going to say this.
Drummer.
Okay, well, then I'm going to say neither.
Because it's a time when the church drummer got a place.
No. Okay, no, well, I'm going to say I don't want neither of them. Because the pocket drummer, if you're not going to allow yourself to be free, then I can't use you on my stage. Because sometimes I need you to divert from the pocket. The church drummer is going to be so churchy that every song is going to sound like we need to shout, so I can't use you either. So I need a stage drummer, and you didn't give me that option. So I don't want neither one of those, actually. So if I have to choose out of those two, then I probably wouldn't do the gig.
I'm going to tell you, I had to learn that because I was doing some major gospel things, and I got a call to do this other gig. So, you know, I go in, and I've done this so long, and I'm like, okay, go in, play a role. You know, dynamics is very, very important with me. Dynamics. So I do everything right, and by the third song, the saxophone player turned around and went, "You play for the Lord." And the bass player just bust out laughing. Now I'm embarrassed. That's all right. That's all right. So, you know, I go on with the gig. So the second set, you know, I know how to work. Okay, if we going here, let's go here. You know, if we going there, I play my role. You don't need to know anything about me unless it's get a drummer sometime. Then, you know, okay, do my thing. So he said, "Nah, I said that because you stayed in your lane." He said, "A couple of times I was like, okay, give me this, but you close with that church thing." And I'm like, I didn't get that. So when I went on the road to do a play again, the guy like, "Where you from?" I said, "Houston, Texas." "Oh, goddamn Houston, church drummers." Hey, and I'm like, okay, what's the problem?
Yeah.
So, you know, people, when
and
they
it's not just
you,
it's not just the drummer. It's not just the drummer. For the most part, you could tell the keyboard player if he really know R&B or if he only playing church. So it's not, if most of us who have went to school for music are trained to hear certain things, or because we grew up in, like I said, being in church and then going to do performances outside of church, you could hear it. It's distinctive. It's very distinctive.
You can hear it.
You can hear it. So
you can hear it. And then the thing is, and I said that because I'm a drummer, drummers just have to discipline themselves to say, "Hey, I'm a drummer." That's like comedians. You know, it used to kill me when black comics go, "I got my show for the black crowd, I got my show for the white crowd." No, then you ain't no comic, okay? Just be funny. White folk gonna figure it out, lad. Black folk gonna figure it out, lad. So when you playing, just play. Don't pigeonhole yourself. Learn it all. And if you learn it all, you can play it all, and you can play with anybody.
Yeah,
you know?
I'll agree with that.
Yeah, you can play with anybody, but don't come creeping in the club tiptoeing when you know you ain't ready. All you know is, you know, this is, you know, foot stomp clap. No. Stay out of there. You know, work on your craft, come back. Because, like we said, when you start doing other gigs, those are the opportunities. The clubs, fun, little change, you get a chance to work. But the other gigs, the other projects, you know, going in the studio, doing what you do, all that, you know, pans out. Oh, callers, I see y'all. If you want to talk to Colette, just hit the button and I'll bring you in. I see y'all. Thank y'all for checking me out tonight, as always. Colette, this is crazy. We had this discussion, and by you being a musician, I'm going to ask you. You remember Arsenio Hall the first time he was on, right?
Oh, for sure.
Okay. Kerry was on my show last week. We kind of touched on this, too. His show was great, but to be based in L.A., he had the worst man ever, in my opinion, on late night TV, that posse. So when he came back the second time, I just knew that was something that was going to be fixed. It was a different posse. Still lousy. You know, how do you look at a band that they're all session musicians, but they don't have no feel for each other?
I'm going to say this, and I don't want no musician.
That's a long gig, ain't it?
Well, I'm going to say this, and I don't want any musician to take it the wrong way. I mean, I'm not calling out no names or anything. But the crazy part
is,
I've been to other venues here in Houston on my off nights. I've been to certain places where I wasn't the feature. You know, I was there just to be entertained because I went on to some type of function or whatever it was. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening to the band and I'm asking myself, how in the hell did y'all get booked? Like, was anybody listening who went to hear this and said that this was going to be a good idea? And again, I'm not saying that I'm the best vocalist in Houston. I'm not saying that. But I'm listening to the, like you saying, I'm listening to the musicianship. I'm listening to how well y'all are gelling together. It sounds like everybody's feeding down their own street because none of y'all are collectively doing anything together. The bass player not mixing with the drummer. Like, everything was all over the place. And I just kept asking myself the whole night or wherever I was. And sometimes it would be really good functions. I'm looking at, it cost me $150 to sit at this table, so I could imagine what they pay in a band. And y'all sound like this is supposed to be. So I understand where you're coming from. When you hear certain things and you're like, wow, I thought that you would have put on a better caliber show. I thought you would have picked a better caliber of musicians. Or, again, that's one of those things, like you said, you go to the microphone saying, I just got to get through two 45-minute sets and we could all go home. I just push through. Just push through. It's not going to last more than 2 hours. Just get through this 2 hours and everybody can go home.
Those are the hard gigs.
Oh, those are the gigs that 2 hours become 2 days. It feels like you've been on
exactly.
stage forever. So, yeah, I get
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And I've had those and it was like, ooh. And then probably the last 1.5, 2 songs, now all of a sudden, you know, you find a little chemistry.
Oh, yeah. By the time they
like,
gel
oh,
together,
nope,
time to leave.
I'm out.
By the time everybody get it together, we at the last 20 minutes of the gig. So, yeah.
That's crazy, man. That's just different things, man. It all pans out like that. Okay, what do you consider, I guess you could say, the best way for Colette to just unwind and have her time?
Stay at home. Literally. Stay at home.
You're a homebody?
I'm going to say this. If I'm not at a gig, 90% of the time I'll be at home. I just started venturing out and telling myself, in order to be friendly, you got to show yourself a friend. So I have to start going to other people's venues and going to other people's shows. When people pop up in mine, I have to start reciprocating what they're doing. So I just started doing that not too long ago. But for the most part, I'm at home. I'm with my kids. I'm fishing. I cut my own yard. I'm a DIY kind of person, so I go in my garage. I got tools. I got a whole shed outside. I can probably build you a house with all the tools I got in my garage. Like, literally, I don't mind just sitting around the house and cooking. And I will cook. My kids say, Mama, you cook too much, because I cook like it's 50 people here and it's just a couple of us. So
I don't still owe you a pork chop sandwich,
dude. You what?
I don't still owe you a pork chop sandwich, dude.
You probably do.
I don't think I do.
Now, one thing I will do is eat. I'm a foodie, so I'll find something to cook to try to do it myself, or find new places to go get food from. But lately I've been trying to find my good headspace. I've been, like you said, life happens, and like you said, for the last 2 years you've been dealing with stuff. For the last year, everything has just been all over the place. My head has been like so chaotic that I've actually had to like keep regrouping. And I'm gonna say this. I'm going on record as saying this. And it might, I don't know who's listening, it might help somebody, because as artists or as people, sometimes I guess I'm not gonna say I'm no celebrity or nothing, but I'm known here in Houston. So you don't ever want anything to tarnish, you know, your reputation or tarnish what you're doing. And I found myself in a predicament that I had allowed alcohol to take over everything going on in my life. Literally, I would show up to my shows, and by the end of the show, I'm cussing and throwed off and crazy and because I was allowing alcohol to become a happy place when I should have just been, you know, just socially drinking like I used to do, alcohol took over making me happy. And for people to say that, oh, you could just quit, you could just quit, you could stop drinking. Alcohol is a drug. It's a drug. You could become addicted to it. That's the reason why they have Alcohol Anonymous. That's the reason why they have therapies and groups and, you know, treatment centers. It's something that you have to try to get over. And I will say that for the last maybe couple of months, I have been dealing with just acknowledging that I had started to have a true, like, urgent need to address the amount of alcohol I was drinking. And it's really easy to do with the line of work that I do. It's
because
really easy.
Not only, people buying drinks,
I would tell people all the time, they're like, well, Colette, stop buying the drinks. I said, I don't buy drinks. I can't remember the last time I bought a drink. I don't buy drinks. I would just show up, and because they know that's what I drink, they would just start sending. Before the night is over, I think me and my assistant counted one night. It was almost 15 cups of alcohol on my table because people just kept sending drinks. Kept, take a shot with us. Oh, it's my birthday, take this shot. Oh, Colette, we're going to send you a drink. Oh, we're going to buy the band a drink. So by the time you done took this one, took that one, and did this and did that, went to break, had two more, by the end of the night, I am out of my mind. And so I've been really dealing with addressing my alcohol issue. And I keep telling myself the only way for me to address it is I simply have to start acknowledging it in public, because I need the people that's around me not to aid and abet me drinking. If you really my friend, or you really love Colette singing and you really support me, then don't buy my drink. Don't support that.
See, now I know. If I'm at the show, I'm going to walk up there and just take it.
No, say, I don't drink at my shows. I don't. I will say this. The last couple of weeks, I've been to two different birthday parties, but it wasn't on a show day. I had a designated driver that took me there, you know, that kind of thing. Like, I went. I wasn't driving. I went there with the intentions to party. But I have to keep telling myself, there's not going to be a Colette, let's get drunk on stage. I'm gonna send my whole career to hell if I keep doing that. I just can't.
Yeah, you gotta be able to keep it together.
Yeah.
But
I gotta be able to acknowledge that there's an issue.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you strong enough and you got a strong enough support group around you to where, you know, they gonna cut for you, you know.
Yeah.
And my classmates still think, I said, well, I ain't had opportunity to just really have a party again, you know, everything that's been going on, you know, because when they were sitting over there all bougie, you went over there and started singing to them and calling them sophisticated asses. I said, y'all weren't sitting over there bougie like that. Next thing you know, hell, they got up and started dancing with you. So that's what makes the entertainment worth getting out going to.
Right. And what I'm saying is, in order for me to keep being able to be that light, in order for people to keep saying, hey, I want to go see her sing, I can't be that drunk girl on stage. I can't be the girl that cussed out everybody on stage. So that's why I'm saying, in order for me to keep the consistency and the relevance and the longevity of what I've been doing, I have to change the narrative, and the narrative has been that's the drunk girl on stage. So in order to change the narrative, Colette has to change the mindset. And so that's why I had battled with myself, like, ooh, should I say something about, you know, what I'm going through on this platform? And I'm like, why not? I say something about my cancer on platform, so it might just be some other person that's dealing with alcohol or dealing with the fact that the treatment center won't take you because they say you're not an alcoholic. I don't drink every day. I just drink at the club. I don't wake up when I'm at home. I don't drink at my house at all. I only drink when I go to a gig. So they don't consider me an alcoholic. I'm considered a social drinker. But I can't overdo it socially. That doesn't make sense.
And that was, 2016, 2017? When you went through that battle, I think it was 2016, 2017.
My last biggest stint was back then. Unfortunately, I'm kind of dealing with some of those issues right now, but you know me. I'm going to keep fighting until I ride it till the wheels fall off. That's what I'm going to keep saying. We're going to ride it and keep riding it and keep riding it until, you know, it is what it is. But
I remember that. We prayed for you. And then I remember the night you came back, when you first came back. And that was kind of emotional.
But you know what? I'm glad I had the support system I did. I went from being a fan to a friend. I thank everybody that was a part of that support system, because I had to take some time off from the band. I had to go and deal with my health. And when I finally did come back with the band, with the unit and everybody, it felt good to know that people were like, hey, we've been praying for you. We've been waiting on you. No, we wasn't gonna let your spot get taken. We were just going to let you go. We knew you was coming back. We was going to keep praying until you got back. So that felt good. That really did. That support system really felt good.
I remember when I was in the hospital going through my thing, and, you know, I'd be sitting in the room, and my sister come see me. It'd be a Friday, then she'd bring me, like, poppers, a baked potato, and I would fool her because I wasn't supposed to have the meat in it, but I would tell her, yeah, just bring the one with chicken, and she didn't know, so I would eat it, and then she would leave, and I was sitting there one night, and I'm like, man, I don't know what my number's going to look like in the morning. I shouldn't have done that, and my phone rung, and it was JB, and I'm like, man, it's ain't even 10 o'clock yet, and he's like, hold the phone. He put it on speakerphone, and he was singing. And I was like, oh, man. That just, stuff like that, people don't know how that just
that'll
really helps.
You
and when I, when I finally came in the club, and it was a Tuesday, so Cookie was singing. And she saw me and started crying in the middle of the song. Then I heard somebody scream, and it was you. And I'm like, you out on a Tuesday? You know, the love and support people get when they going through is priceless, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, you told us, man, you kind of deal with, we're going to go back in there and pray on that again, and you're going to come out of it even better again.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's how we do. That's how we do. You know, we don't lay down. We walk through it, you know. If you lay down, it's going to get you anyway. If you stand up scratching your head, it's going to get you. We walk through it, you know. If they come to us, we walk through it. And that's how I am with everything. You know, I got a full plate, but I'm walking through it. I ain't standing there. I'm walking through it. Because I got to get somewhere, and you got to get somewhere, you know.
Oh, for sure.
So, yeah, God didn't put us here, you know, giving us what he's given us. You know, all this talent for us to just cringe and crawl up to adversity. We're going to walk through it and come out better, you know, even better. So what's next? I know you got some real stuff. We can't get on that now. But what's next on the horizon for Colette?
Well,
we can't talk about.
I got some music coming out before the end of the year. I have a huge project that is it's been in the works for the last couple of months, and we've been diligently working on it, and it's finally going to do what it's supposed to do, because we're going to keep praying that it is. And I'll just say this, without giving it away, it was sent to L.A.
No, I'm not going to say what it is.
I'm just going to say it was sent to where it needed to be, and it did it. So hopefully before the end of the year, or hopefully by the beginning of next year, I'll be able to come back on the show and be able to tell everybody what the huge project is that I'll be working on, or have been working on. And I'm really excited about it. I really, really, really am excited about it. And that's what I'm saying. I really had to go back and, like, do a self-reflection not one time. I'm not going to say that I didn't stumble and fall, because I have been, but I had to go back and do a whole bunch of self-reflections and be like, do you see all these doors opening and you about to crash and burn over a drink? Girl, if you don't put that drink down.
Yeah, yeah. And here's something else, too. And I say this because I don't want to get into it. You know, I dated a professional singer years ago, and then I dated a singer a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have a good personality and an attitude on stage. Not just on stage, but off stage. But more importantly, when you working with your band, your gig, you know, if something don't click, if something miss, you know, you don't blame it on the band. You work through it. You don't turn around and frown at whoever made the error or whatever. You talk about it on break. And 9 out of 10, it wasn't that major, especially in certain venues. It ain't that major, you know. You wasn't at the Toyota Center or anything like that. It's everything's workable. So
yeah,
I applaud you for having the personality to where musicians enjoy working with you.
Yeah,
because
I do. And like I said, I don't ever want my reputation to get to where. Like I said, I was starting to get the reputation, or might have already have gotten that reputation, like I said, the drunk girl on stage. And so in order for that to change, I got to change the behavior and the narrative. So once you see that, oh, you know what? She ain't acting the way she used to act no more. There's something different about her now. It don't look the way it used to look. And I'm again, I don't have any musicians that I know of that's like, you know, hey, I don't want to come and work with you, because I still had a band that I have right now. But nobody wants to get to that place, and you just start wanting to change things so it never begins to be that kind of issue. But I do want to go on record as saying all the musicians that I've worked with since 2006, I've really enjoyed, like extremely enjoyed. All of them had something special that they brought to the nucleus of what we were doing.
That's great. That's great. Well, that time is about to wind down. I really appreciate you coming in. Man, me and Carrie and other times, it'll get to the point where we'll get to talking and talk about the business and music. And next thing you know, we done gone way beyond that hour. But that's how it is when, you know, you're having fun, too. But I really want to thank you for coming on. I will be bringing you back so we can talk about all that good news after that happens. And because it's going to happen. So.
Oh, yeah, it's going to happen. And I can't wait to come back and tell you about it.
And I got to thank you, because, like I said, I was during that particular time. You know, I had gone through a divorce. I was going through it, and I had given up the music game, like, years and years ago. So I didn't know where to go. My sister dragged me out and made me come go to Status because, you know, my buddy owned it, and I had never been. So when I came that Tuesday, I came back that Friday. And that helped me through some hard times as far as sitting at home alone, not used to the family structure no more. I'm not booked to go do shows because I'm home. I'm giving that up to try to get this custody thing done. So my outlet was coming to see y'all Thursdays in most city. I was right down the street in Seattle, and then I come see y'all on Fridays. So you blessed me and didn't know it.
Well, thank you.
I mean, you did, you and the band. So when I think about all that, that's why I was like, you know, I'm going to bring my show back. God has brought me through too much stuff for me to just not want to do the things I used to do, you know. And my show was the number one show for 2 years straight when I did it. And I'm going to bring it back, but I'm going to focus on the local talent, you know. If you know them, send them my way. I'll bring them on because also I got national talent that's going to be coming on too.
Okay,
you know,
cool.
You'll hear
well, just let me know.
Shows.
You know, we've been friends a long time, so whatever I can do to help
yeah.
you.
Hey, we good. We going to do it. And whatever I can do to help you, same thing. You know, same thing. We going to make this happen. We going to put ourselves back on the map.
There you go.
You know, we going to do it. Thank you so much. You know I love you. And
love you too.
I got to come out. I'll make a Wednesday where I can get out.
All right.
And
if not
a Wednesday, another day. All right. Take care. Thank y'all.
All right.
See y'all later. Tomorrow night. All right.
Bye-bye.